Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th of September, Anno Domini 2015. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Michael Oden.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Yes, yes, you heard properly. It's just Michael and me in the studio.
We're all alone.
I don't know where anybody else is. So we'll just be doing whatever we do here. AVG, the antivirus program, AVG, has updated its privacy policies language. And in the amended document, the security firm admits that it can make money from its free offerings with non-personal data. These non-personal data include your device's brand, language, and what apps you have in use, among other things. The company is adamant that it doesn't sell anything with identifying information, and the data that it does collect are anonymized and stored without anything that can link it back to you. According to the updated policy, AVG can collect data you yourself provide, plus it can use cookies to track your searches and your activities on websites, apps, and other products. It can then use those details to build anonymous data profiles, he quoted, or create statistical information which it can then sell. A spokesrobot from the company said that AVG updated the language to be more transparent and make sure people know that it can make money off its free products using their information. The new rules will take effect on October 15th, 2015, and by continuing to use AVG after that, you have already agreed to the collection unless you take steps to opt out. The spokesrobot then said, users who do not want AVG to use non-personal data in this way will be able to turn it off. Of course, if you pay for the product, then AVG will not use your data. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. AVG says it can sell your data if you use their free version. And the choices are, I will continue to use the free version. I'll pay to stay anonymous. I'm a tightwad, so I'll opt out. I'm a skinflint, so I'll find something else. So far, we have, well, I have to scroll up now. We have 24 votes. And not surprisingly, most of you said you're a skinflint, so you'll find something else. Although, six of you said you'll continue to use the free version. Nobody said they'd opt out, and four people said they'd pay to stay anonymous.
Should be an option that says it doesn't matter, they're going to suck my data and usage anyways.
No. They're saying they're trying to be transparent about it. If you pay or if you opt out, they will not use your data. So we'll see how that all works. And we know you'll all have a lot more to say about this. So if you head on over to the Soundbites website, you will be able to go down the far right, slide down, scroll down until you see the forums. The second forum on the list is the poll forum, and the first choice so far is 26 September 15. AVG says it can sell your data if you use their free version. We've already got a half a dozen or so replies, and most people are being very civil. I appreciate that. So join us there. Also, if you're listening live at this time, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I apologize. Steve is frantically in the process of setting up, but we have no YouTube channel today, so you'll have to listen live.
It'll be up in a few minutes.
It'll be up in a few minutes, but it's not up yet.
Yeah, you were saying I don't know where anyone is, and I'm screaming, I'm in the parking lot. I'm in the parking lot.
And so so there you are. But, you know, this privacy policy business, I don't blame AVG at all. You know, they have to make money. And the reality is, we've talked about this many times in terms of other things. We talked about it last week. We talk about it every time we have a pledge drive. Maybe a few percentage of the people who listen join. And in this case, a small percentage, a similarly small percentage of the people who use the product actually pay for it. So they have a couple of different choices, one of which is to go out of business, right? And the other one of which is to find an alternate income stream. And that income stream is selling anonymized data to advertising agencies, advertising places, whether it's an agency or a website or whatever it is. But and as long as those data are anonymized, as long as those data are not something that can track back to me directly, you know, a lot of people don't have a problem with that. They don't mind being part of the anonymous masses. The same thing is true of many other places and sites that you use. What's interesting is many of them are not as transparent as AVG is. I think we have to give AVG a certain amount of credit.
Yeah, that's what usually happens. Somebody gets caught doing something they shouldn't. Right. And have to apologize for it.
Right. Whereas in this particular case, AVG is telling us ahead of time, this is what we want to do. This is how we're going to do it. If you don't like it, you have a way to opt out, or you can buy in the product, or you can go get another product. But this is what we're going to do for the people who don't opt out or buy another product. So, or buy their product. So I have to commend them. They've been very upfront, very open about it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'll tell you right now, that's some pretty good stuff that they're doing that for. So, if you agree or disagree, please give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. The lovely and talented Michael Oden will be happy to, get you on the air so you can, either agree or tell us we're all wet.
There's also been some similar complaints about ad blockers, that if too many people run ad blockers, the websites that can only exist because of ads are either going to have to go behind a paywall or you're going to lose that site. That right. Content goes away because they can't afford it because you're blocking the ads that they need.
Right. And in fact, we talked about that a little bit last week. I mentioned that Soundbites is one of those sites, and we had a couple of people who were extremely generous donating to the Soundbites website. So I want to thank you all. That was great. I really do appreciate it. It'll help us keep the site up and running because it costs money to keep a site up and running and storage space and everything else. So we'll see how that all plays out in the future. But right now, I think we're close to okay anyway, so thank you to those who donated. And if you haven't, feel free. If you haven't blocked it, there's a donate button on the website. sadly, many blockers also donate block the donate button. So, but it's there. You have to scroll down for it. I made it semi-discreet. Many people will have to actually scroll down to see it, but it's there. I suppose I should put it up top so it's much more in your face.
And that's what people don't like about ads.
Right.
It would be nice if it was easier to have an ad that, well, see, that was the whole point of cookies. If the ads were relevant, I wouldn't mind them. But they're hardly ever relevant.
Right.
Because we block cookies. Cookies were supposed to make ads relevant, but the bad guys figured out a way to do that.
Right.
And then the ads were supposed to support the websites, but now the bad guys are buying fake ads.
Right.
And that's hurting the industry as a whole as well. So it's, you know, somebody has to figure out some other way to be able to make the money to give us the content we want.
And we haven't figured out how that's going to be.
Yeah.
If people don't pay,
yeah,
and you can't do ads, what's left.
Yeah. The direct donation model is popular with a lot of podcasts that I listen to.
Right.
One of them, Escape Pod, really neat science fiction podcast. They have a donate button, but they also have a subscribe button for $2 a month. And they say a lot of times that they prefer the subscribers because then they can budget it.
You know,
it's great if you send them $50 a year, but they don't know that's going to happen.
Right.
That subscribe button, and $2 a month isn't much for most people.
Right, and a lot of places are using Patreon now, and that's really nice.
Well, and that's how it started thousands of years ago. You had a patron to sponsor your thing. Whatever you wanted to do, you find a rich guy to pay you to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now we...
So all you rich guys...
all you rich folks out there, listen, if
or
you're...
Or girls, we won't discriminate.
Right. All you rich folks out there, you can... you can help us all out by becoming the patron of Soundbites, and in fact, the patron of the radio station. If you've got enough money, that's going to cost you nothing, too, frankly. And I don't know why organizations don't step forward anymore. I guess everybody likes to pretend they don't have any money. Did you not reboot your computer again this week?
No, I did reboot it. Well, I rebooted it last week after the show and installed my updates and... It's just this camera doesn't want to work the first time I plug it in.
It's an iSight. It's supposed to work perfectly with a Mac.
No, the Apple one works fine. It's the Logitech.
Oh, it's the Logitech. Then why do you keep unplugging the Apple one?
I don't.
Oh, okay. I see.
They both have a black cord.
Yeah, they both have black cord. we are trying to get the website up and running. As Steve said, there's issues. We don't have a tech crew, so it's us. And when we're a little behind the time getting in, that it still is us. So get over yourself.
I kept telling Jackie I had to leave, and she, do one more thing.
Yeah. No, I get that. That's your job after all, so I understand that. But so that's the AVG thing, and I'm sure you see it all over the place. You know, nobody expects you... as much as we may grumble about it, we pay tolls on various roads. We certainly pay for our entertainment in whatever form. Nobody, although many people, of course, do. Nobody expects you to be able to walk into a theater without paying. Nobody expects to be able to walk into a theater without paying for a ticket. And, of course, you pay through the nose for cable. And even then, you've sometimes got ads of some sort, depending on the station you're watching. You know, yes, HBO, for which you pay extra, has no ads and Showtime and like that.
Between the shows, they'll give you ads for their other shows.
Yeah. But they're not selling, soap and cars and stuff. So, but even though I am paying Time Warner for an awful lot of stations... A couple of hundred of them, last count. There's still ads. There's still ads all over the place. So even though we pay, we're paying to see ads, frankly. And we don't seem to have an issue doing that for our television viewing. If you listen to a commercial channel, on the radio, you will get ads all the time, and we seem to think that's a pretty good setup there because, you're trading free radio shows for ads. In our case, of course, it's underwriters, not ads. And nobody seems to complain about that. But when it comes to ads on websites,
well, that shouldn't happen. That's terrible. You're making me watch. You're making me see the ads. Blah, blah, blah.
And I admit some of them are terribly intrusive. The ones that annoy me, frankly, are the ones that pop up in the middle of the screen. I will leave a website immediately. I don't care how interested I am in what's going on behind that ad. An ad pops up. I close that tab. I'm done. Yeah.
You jump on the page and then... You're there for like 2 seconds, and all of a sudden the page grays out, and then there's like just like video in the middle of the page. Yeah, it's a mess. Yeah, total.
And I don't like the video stuff. Well, people are beginning to really complain about that because, of course, in a lot of cases, we have bandwidth issues. people pay for bandwidth if they're going to a site on their phones, and even in many homes across the nation, you pay for your bandwidth. And of course, in America, most people's net access is so slow that it takes a while for those sites to come up because they're loading the ad, and that's going to play first before anything else happens. Now, of course, someone who has fiber doesn't worry about that. But the vast majority of you out there do worry about that. So it's you know, there's a lot of hidden costs to the stuff we see on the web all the time. And I think it's kind of disingenuous of people to be focusing on ads on websites. You know, well, the ads that play music or video are obtrusive. Well, you just cut away from a great emotional scene in the show I'm watching to sell me a car. Tell me that's not obtrusive. And yet we live with that every day.
We've been seeing where some of the now new alternate, you know, sources, you know, Netflix and Hulu are doing their own original programming. The writers still have this write for 15 minutes and then there's a break because we have to do a commercial, and then write for another 10 minutes and then there's a break because we have to do a commercial. So we're sort of seeing some of that pacing still on shows that don't have those commercials.
Yeah, but you know why, don't you? So they can syndicate them later.
And they will show up on television. Because that's right. The most annoying thing when you're watching a movie on TV and it stops to show a commercial in the middle of an intense scene or in the middle of someone's dialogue.
Right, right. And that's an issue that we tend to live with. And yet when an ad shows up on our websites, and if you look at Soundbites, if you actually don't block the ads, you'll find that the ads are way, way down the page. I'm trying to keep them out of your face as much as possible. They're right at the bottom of the page, for Pete's sake. And yet people still block our website. And so we don't get I'm not talking about a lot of money. I'm not talking about tens of dollars a week even. let's be honest. It's pennies. But we don't get those because people block the website.
We'll make it up in volume.
Yeah, we'll make it up in volume. Exactly. But people get adamant. You know, somebody showed me a website.
Well, and one of the features in the new version of Safari is the problem is you've got a bunch of tabs open. You don't know what tab just started that music.
Yeah.
And so what we do now is just hit the mute button on the computer.
Right.
So one of the new features in Safari is it shows a little icon on the tab that the music is playing in.
Yeah.
So you can mute just that one tab.
Yeah. I have to say, Chrome has had
that,
for
a long time, yeah.
And when I first saw that, and then when I run a different browser, it makes me angry that I don't see that icon.
Yeah.
You know? All right. What are we taking a break here? All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we're fully operational. The YouTube channel is up, the stream is running, the transmitter's going, and we have Roger from Irondequoit on the line. Welcome, Roger. What's up?
Well, just a couple comments about the ad blockers and the intrusive ads.
Yeah.
And you do see it more and more. If I have two websites open at once, mm-hmm. all of a sudden a video starts playing in the background of the website that I'm not looking at.
Yeah, right.
And people become annoyed with this, and naturally they go with the ad blocker.
Yep.
And it's greed on the part of the companies, and it's fueled by the fact that they feel they have the same feeling of anonymity that internet trolls have. It's that feeling of anonymity that's led to bad behavior in a lot of things. And well, so people simply go to the ad blocker because it's the path of least resistance.
Yeah, but again, don't forget, every ad blocker I know of can be used selectively. So you can say, you know, I don't mind sound bites, the ads at the bottom, maybe they'll get a penny off of me. I'll unblock them.
It's an AVG ad at the moment.
It's an AVG ad at the moment, as a matter of fact, because it's on the page.
Yeah.
People forget this. Almost every ad blocker lets you selectively decide who does or doesn't get to show you ads. So my point is that you should find the websites that you really do care about, and our hope is that soundbites.org will be one of them, and unblock those sites that have unobtrusive ads.
But the average person isn't going to do that. You or I know how to do that. You or I might do that.
Right.
The average person is just going to throw that ad block around there and say, hey, the ads are gone.
And I completely agree. But my point is I'm trying to educate people to say, you know, you can do this on a per-site basis.
Right. But the other thing might be, rather than just playing with the ad blocker, much like the net neutrality issue, that started off as a thing that a bunch of geeks understood and no one else had a clue what it meant. And by people pounding on this and getting the word out, all of a sudden there was a great victory for the internet in that.
Right.
And
right.
The same thing with ad blocking. If instead of simply setting up a blocker, if people would contact these advertisers and say, you know what, your ad is really intrusive and has caused me not to go to websites where all of a sudden your video is popping up.
Right.
I don't want your video on my phone because it's eating up my data.
Exactly. And what I would love to see. And of course, you can do it. You can block sites in a computer fairly easily, not as easily on a phone or a tablet. But I would love to see something that let me say, block this website. Any site that pops up a video in the middle of my screen, I don't ever want to see it again. Not ever.
Well, how about the option on an ad blocker to say, block this ad, and a little thing pops up and allows you to tell the advertiser why?
Yeah, exactly.
If you tell these guys they're being hurt in the pocketbook.
I've seen that on YouTube ads. If you can close an ad and say it's not relevant to me.
Right.
And theoretically that helps them show you relevant ads.
Right, but how about instead of just irrelevant, it's annoying.
Yeah.
Well, because MSN, that's the only thing anybody would ever use. Come on.
Yeah. And Apple is putting an ad blocker built into Safari on the iPhone. And it's causing a huge controversy because, you know, companies make their ads on web pages.
Right.
But it's especially damaging on cell phones because you are paying for that data that comes down.
Right.
And you go to an ad that downloads a lot of stuff, and it's even bigger. In fact, when I went to the article on Fortune magazine about this ad blocking problem, my uBlock stopped 20 ads from loading.
Yep. Well,
right.
This is
people are just seeking that path of least resistance. Yeah. Throw the ad block around there and move on.
Right, and you're right about greed on some websites, because I go to a number of websites, and I hate to say this, but many of our brother and sister media sites are this way. You get a page full of ads, and in the middle is, you know, 22 lines of text for this particular story. And that's not only annoying, it's like eye pollution.
Well, that's because that's the old model. Newspapers and radio, the only point of them was to sell ads. The fact that you have a show to make people listen doesn't matter. It's to sell the ad.
Right.
So they're doing what they've been doing for the last 100 years.
Right.
And that business model has to change, or they're going to be out of business because people won't put up with it.
Right.
And before the internet, though.
Right.
If someone didn't like the ads or something like that, they sat down and wrote a letter.
Yeah.
Right.
Now you just throw an ad blocker on there and don't worry about it, and we find ourselves in the place we're at now where you may start having to pay for content you want. That, you know, I use a lot of websites. I'm going to pay for each one of them. How the hell am I going to track it?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, they've also talked, you know, about micropayments. Right. For years, we've talked, for decades, for heaven's sake, we've talked about micropayments, where if I go to, say, Forbes.com or Fortune.com and watch a or and read a story, they take a tenth of a penny.
Right. I don't want to pay $10 a month to look at this website all the time. I just want to read this one article.
Right. So they'll take a tenth of a penny. And I go to another's website, and they take a tenth of a penny. So at the end of the day, I've spent maybe 8 cents, 5 cents, 3 cents. So it doesn't hurt much. But if there's a, you know, 100,000 people going to that website, that's a decent amount of money for the company that's putting out the information. And the theory is, of course, that the more relevant, the more interesting, the more useful the website, the more money it will end up making. But that never came about because there are no banks on earth that are ready to take a tenth of a penny out of your account.
Well, that, and it's, you know, just a complicated way of handling something that if the advertisers would just think, am I annoying people with this? Am I turning people off to my product? Am I causing people to close the window?
But have you ever seen a House of Guitars ad?
Yeah.
They're the
worst
most
ads in the world, but everybody remembers them.
Everybody remembers them, and they are taught in advertising classes all over the world as the example of what not to do, except it really, really, really works.
You remember the annoying stuff more than you remember the good stuff.
Right. So when an ad is annoying, you remember it better. That's simple human fact, and the advertising agencies are just going to take advantage of that, you know?
Right, but when the very presence of the ad becomes annoying, you get rid of it before you even look at it again.
Well, and that's...
House of Guitars was nonsense. He kind of sat there and chuckled through it, and that was it. But when something is popping up, when you go to MSN News, they now have a local page. Try to read a local story, and it's blocked by ads, and then you'll get a pop-up for a survey. If you want to read the story, continue reading, you have to do the survey and things like that. That's going beyond House of Guitars.
No, and I agree
with that.
House
of Guitars would make a bad commercial and gamble that people will remember because of it.
Right, right.
Blocking content, you know, because you have to view the ad before you get the content, or you have to fill the survey out before you get the content. It's just beyond what any advertiser should do, and people should start speaking about this, contacting these advertisers, send them an email. They know for every email they get that there are hundreds of people sitting at home rumbling about the same thing.
Right. Well, we've hit step one, right, which is that the ad people are noticing that we're blocking their ads. Step two is going to be somebody, right, step two is going to be why. And step three is, how do we fix this?
Well, part of the problem is Google, which owns DoubleClick and other ad serving agencies. In fact, people have to realize Google's main business is selling you ads. And that search thing is just a side business. Google has said that 56% of digital ads are never even seen. So half of the ads that your company buys on a website are not seen. So you're going to have to do twice as many ads so that some of them get seen.
Right.
And so it's the whole paradigm, the business model of advertising, people not wanting the ads. Something has to change, and somewhere along the way, someone's going to think of a better way to do it, and then suddenly we'll all be doing that.
Well, if the retailers become aware of what they're doing to people, when I set up a website, one of the things I think about is, how easy is this going to be for someone to use? Is it going to be a pleasant experience for them to use? And that will bring me a profit. Not, you know, how much crap can I jam in here at once and force people to swallow?
Right, right. But that's going to be a while.
I'm thinking for websites now offering an icon on the desktop.
Right.
So you can go to that website, a retailer's website, and see what's new. But I don't want to include it where the minute you download or you go to that website, all of a sudden an icon pops up on your screen, because that's going to do nothing but pork people off.
Right. Exactly right.
And people have got to let these retailers and ad companies know, I'm porked off. And that's the only way you can do it, is to stand up and say it. There have been so many things where people, I've said, I want to change something. People have told me, well, you may as well shout at the devil. And then they talk to the devil, and he said, no, 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 not that guy. Get him out of here. He'll make you nuts. Just give him whatever he wants to show him the door. You've got to speak up. You've got to rag on these people, and it's got to be everyone doing it.
Yep.
But if a few people begin to do it, others jump on the bandwagon. It's human nature. Yep. Look at the net neutrality thing.
Yeah, well, the good news, like I said, the good news is the ad companies are starting to realize they've got a problem. You know, and that's step one.
Step three is profit.
Admitting you have a problem. Yeah. Right, exactly. Well, exactly.
No one knows what step two is.
Right, right, yeah. Right. All right, Roger, thank you so much. Yep. Is he gone? Okay. Yeah, yeah, Roger's gone. Roger's, you know, quite right as in terms of this stuff. We've got a lot of learning to do, and by we, I mean actually the ad companies. They've got a lot of learning to do as to how they're going to make money, how they're going to sell their ads, because if people block the ads, it doesn't matter how clever they are, it doesn't matter how interesting they are, it doesn't matter how prevalent they are, nobody will see
that.
Yeah,
because the world of the internet is a constantly changing environment. They have to figure out how they're going to fit into that environment and change with the environment instead of doing the same old thing over and over and over again and expecting it to work.
Right. Well, and even in the physical world, things change. It just takes time. Those of us that are old enough to remember, the Winston Kump racing series and cigarette ads you saw on TV and magazines all the time, as smoking has gotten less and less socially acceptable, new rules have come into play. So you can't show cigarette ads on television, and they had to change the racing series. Even though cigarette companies are huge and they make a ton of money, it's becoming less acceptable.
Let's talk about backlash or backfiring though. When the FCC said no more cigarette ads on television, advertising cigarette companies no longer had to pay for cigarette ads. And yet, cigarette sales did not go down.
Yeah, you watch some of the old shows from the 30s and 40s, and they were all sponsored by cigarette companies, and everyone was smoking in them.
Yep. Well, that was cool.
Yeah,
you know, smoking a cigarette was shorthand for I'm cool.
Yeah,
right. And so, it was a whole different thing. Nowadays, I'm shocked when I watch something like Graham Norton and people drink alcohol
on British television
on the air. Yeah.
And when they have American guests on, they're always surprised that you're allowed to do that.
Yep. Now, there's a show called Geeks Who Drink.
Yeah.
And they drink on that show.
But it's on after 10.
Yeah. People are swearing now after 10. They're using...
They're relaxing the rules
language
a little bit more. Yeah.
Well, and that leads right back to people stopped watching network television and started watching cable television because the rules were less there.
Yeah.
You know, so...
If it's important to the story, I'll do that. Yeah.
Right. Is it relevant nudity?
Yeah.
All right, listen, we're going to take another quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Bob from Henrietta on the line. Hiya, Bob. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. A few minutes ago, you were speaking to the prior caller, and you made a statement that the customer or end user has to learn to allow different sites and so forth.
Yeah.
Sorry, wrong answer. The advertising industry has to learn not to piss off the customers.
Yep.
Until they do, however, you have control. You've always had control, and people get angry. It's either I don't go to the site at all or I see the ads. No, there's a third option. And if you don't take it, that's on you.
Yes, I know. I have the ability, but I'm not going to bother by site.
That's on you. That's your choice. But what I'm saying is you have a choice.
But eventually, if the advertising industry doesn't learn, they're going to drive themselves right out of business because more and more people are going to use blockers.
Right, and that's where they're at now. So they're trying to figure out new ways to do it, and we're trying to figure out new ways to use the web.
The solution is simple. Use non-intrusive advertising. Static banner ads, who cares? But if the advertising jumps out and interferes with the content, guess what? You're getting blocked and along with everybody else.
Yep.
Yeah, but like I said, you have a choice. And that's you, and you've made something. Your choice. Mm-hmm. Your choice is to say no entirely. But other people have a different choice, and they can make it.
But I would wager that most people are like myself, and they're just going to do blocking wholesale.
Most people are like you are because they don't know they have a choice. And all I'm saying is it's up to all of us to let people know that they do indeed have a choice. Then if their choice is to just block everybody, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. What I'm saying is it's not your only alternative.
Well, I know I have a choice, but my choice is, okay, fine, until the advertising industry polices themselves, guess what? I'm ignoring the bunch yet.
Well, two things. Yeah. First, that's exactly what I was saying. And secondly, because you blocked them, you'll never know if they do decide to make non-obtrusive ads. But that's a different story, and that's a different argument for a different time. But
one comment on something else you said mm-hmm. earlier before I go.
Yeah.
You were talking about people not being offended or ticked off by radio and TV network advertising. That communication is one way. CBS, NBC, WCMF, or any other broadcaster, they're not collecting information about me.
Oh, please. Yes, they are. Yes,
no,
they are
yes,
every
they are.
Single minute of the day. You don't think that
a broadcast signal radio is all one way. It only goes one way. There is no data channel.
There's a reason why they put the ads the way they put them on radio. There's a reason why there's club ads on PXY. There's a reason why there's other ads on other stations. They are collecting data on...
But not over the radio.
Not over the radio, right. But they are collecting data.
That's what the Nielsen homes are for?
They cannot. It's a one-way communication system.
No, I'm sorry, Bob. You're simply wrong. I'm inside the industry, and I see stuff all the time about the demographics of our advertisers. They know. I'm sorry you don't believe that, but it's true.
I'm listening to XXXX radio station. How does that radio station know what other radio stations I might be listening to? How does another TV station know what other TV stations I might be watching?
Oh, that's easy.
As opposed to the internet advertising industry.
Yeah, the cable company knows what station you watched and how long you watched it because they had to send it to you.
Right, and you don't think they're collecting that data? God bless you. You're so cute when you're naive.
But you're right in that the actual radio broadcast is one way. They don't know that someone's listening by the radio, but they do know by surveys. They do know by polls. They do know by their own websites, and they do know by the letters. Some people still do write angry letters,
right,
about something they
see.
So
they don't know specifically that you're listening. But that's the whole. But they're all like that. Even when they do take your data, they anonymize it.
Hopefully,
but then compare that to internet advertising, which does collect information about what else you're doing.
It's a little more accurate, but Bob, honestly, not that much more accurate. It truly is not. I'm sorry. Right. I wish that you were right, but sadly. You are not. Believe me when I tell you, they know who listens and who listens when.
And that's how advertisements are eventually sold, is they know the demographics of the people listening to their station. They know what products get advertised during that time based on who's listening at the time.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Bergen, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Hey, guys. I want to change the topic for just a moment.
Sure.
I had a question about the Chromium or Chrome browser, at least in Linux. I just noticed, like, the last couple months that whenever I close the Chrome browser, I'm using a lot more RAM than I was before. And so I go into System Monitor, and it shows several different processes going for Chrome and Chromium. So I have to, like, kill those processes, and then it gives me back the RAM. But I wasn't sure why, or if anybody knows, has heard about this, why it's doing it.
Yeah, there are a couple of things going on here. One of them is that Google has Google knows about this and has begun changing the way they do things. They've significantly reduced the amount of RAM each tab you open takes. So that's good. And under Linux, Chrome processes, there are a number of them, and you can turn them off. I think you can do that. I'm not running.
I found a tech note at Google about it too.
Oh, good. So you can reduce the Chrome memory. There's a way you can say don't preload, and when I shut it down, make sure it stays shut down. But I don't have that in my head. But
and also sometimes it's the extensions you have loaded. That eat up their own memory separately.
Okay, so even when the browser is not running, it's still going.
Well, in some, it depends. It depends on what you're running, because as Steve said, often it's not the browser; it's an extension that you loaded.
Okay, but I thought that was only running if the browser was.
Oh no, not necessarily
running. Wow, I did not know that. Okay,
not necessarily. Some of
I noticed in Firefox it doesn't do that when I close. You know, quit the browser.
Right.
Huh, okay. Well, I'll have to do some more Googling about that and see if I can keep it from doing that, because it's kind of annoying. You know what? If I don't use Chrome that often, I use Firefox most of the time, but, you know, once in a while when I do use it, I have to go back, you know, after I quit, I have to go back in and shut those things down, or it just eats up, like, at least a couple hundred megabytes of RAM.
It tends to go in cycles. So right now, Chrome is the RAM hog, and they'll fix that. But then Firefox will start being a RAM hog as they add new features to it.
Firefox has gotten better since the newer, 40 or 41 version.
Yep. And Chrome is getting better. Chrome has the issue with Chrome, of course, is that there are Chromebooks out there which are only 2 gig of RAM. I'm running one right now. I've got 10 tabs open. And I'm using just over a gig of RAM.
Whoa, yeah.
And that's because I'm running the latest version, and it swaps out pages, tabs that are in the background, and blah, 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 blah. And also I've minimized the number of extensions I'm running and which ones I run. So, I've got extensions that are taking easily half a gig.
I just found an extension that claims to be able to reduce the memory uses of other extensions.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is true of every operating system and every program. The people who write the programs, they've all got 8 gig, 16 gig, right? So when they're writing a program and they look and it says, only uses 3 gig, that's not bad. And then they sell it to somebody who's only got 4 gig in their machine, and oops, they're trying to multitask, and oops. And when Google came out with Chromebooks, that realization hit them hard, and so they began to reduce the footprint significantly. So also look at what extensions you have, because, even if you're not using an extension, it might be loading.
I mean, I don't have a lot, but
But if you say you had this extension that let you do post to a website, to a WordPress website, and then you stopped using it, but you didn't bother to get rid of that extension. Well, it's still loading when you load the browser.
Even if you have it disabled?
Even if you have it disabled, it loads some.
It loads enough to know that it's disabled.
Right. Okay. It loads enough to say, if you need me, I'm here. So if you're not using it at all anymore and you really don't want it, delete it.
Yeah.
And the note from Google is that Chrome version 45 will drastically, which is better than significantly, drastically reduce RAM usage.
Oh, okay.
Right. And you can tell which version you're running by typing up in the address bar. Right, in the address bar, you type Chrome:/Chrome.
Right.
And that also, by the way, lets you check for and apply updates and do other stuff. But it will tell you what version you're running. I'm running version 45, 64-bit, blah, 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 blah,
and
blah,
check
blah.
Your extensions.
And you can also check all your extensions.
But all these extensions I didn't know I had, or didn't remember I had installed.
See? See? And that's how that works. If you don't need those extensions.
Ooh, that's neat. Install. Ooh, that's neat. Install.
Exactly. And then you play with it and you think, well, I don't really, I'm not going to play with that anymore.
Yeah.
But you don't, well, you don't uninstall.
I should just get rid of them then if I'm really not using them. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that. Okay. Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot, guys.
There you go.
Okay. Take care.
Yep.
Most of these are ones that you told me about.
I'm an enabler.
Yes.
I admit it. Some of them I really like that one, whatever.
Currently.
What it does is when you open a new tab, it brings up the time and the date and the week's weather for your area. And I really like that. It's nice to be able to just hit that new tab.
We used to put this type of stuff in the menu bar, but we've run out because there's too many other menus.
Well, and here's the problem. Now, and I admit I have a problem. I run currently. I also run a little weather thing right here, which tells me the weather is 66 degrees and whatever it is, and shows me the weather for the week and a picture from, looks like Frontier Field. And so, you know, I can see all of that stuff.
Is that? Which one is that? Let me install it.
It's called, hold on, it's called weather. It's called weather. You can have lots and lots of these extensions. I have an extension that lets me play text adventures in my web browser.
Yeah.
How often do I actually use it? Never. I admit it.
But you
never.
Can.
But I can.
That's why the speedometers go to 100.
Right.
I don't go that fast, but I know I could if I wanted to.
Right. This is it. It's called weather.
Just weather.
Yeah. That's the one. There's lots and lots of these, and some of them are useful, and some of them, to be entirely honest, are not terribly. But on a disabling helps. It brings down your memory a little bit, but actually removing them if you're never going to. For example, I have something called Sketchpad 3.5. Honestly, am I ever going to use that? No, it's time for me to delete it. It's gone now. And it's just not something I need on this particular system.
Yeah, I have four. I have four extensions, and I use, I think, one of them. So, yeah.
One of my favorites remains Greenhouse. What happens is every time you go to a web page that has a member of Congress on it, it underlines it, it highlights it, and if you point to it, it'll show you who they get their money from. And this was written by a 14-year-old kid. It's kind of amazing. But, yeah, so there's a bunch of stuff that, you know, if you're not – everybody does this. Everybody does this. It's like getting a brand-new phone, you know? You play with it so much that the battery runs down in like 4 hours, and you think, well, this is a crappy phone. But when you stop playing with it, it works fine.
Yep.
But by then, you've also loaded 200 or 300 apps that you don't need, and now your phone's out of RAM, out of memory, and you're thinking, what the heck?
What do you mean? What do you mean, disk full?
I had that problem this morning. I wanted to load PayPal onto my phone, and I couldn't because I didn't have enough space left.
Yeah,
and I thought, what's in here? Oh, that? No, I've never used. I used that once. Maybe I should get rid of this. Yeah. Now, so there's a lot of that goes on, and it's a we forget. You know, we set them up and play, and we think we have an unlimited and we really kind of don't. So it's something to be careful of when you're doing stuff. I try to be mindful of that, but it doesn't always work. All right, that music tells me that you wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But luckily, you get to do it again, because after a short break, we'll be coming back to bring you a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe with Steve Ray, with Michael Oden, and with me, Nick Francesco. You can join in the fun. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great and solely, and don't forget this part, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, you are listening to the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we have Steve from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Steve. Talk to me.
Oh, hi. Great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have an iPhone 6, the smaller one.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, I do not have Wi-Fi on that yet. What's the definition and the advantage of Wi-Fi?
Generally speaking, Wi-Fi connects you to the internet in your house or you know around town, coffee shops, bookstores, and it's generally free because you're already paying for that internet service at home.
Okay.
So you can use your phone on Wi-Fi, especially when you're at home, and then not have to pay the cellular rates. So part of all cell phones is you pay for how much data you use. So if you look up a website, you know, say that uses, you know, 100 megs, you're allowed on your plan 2, 3, 4, 5 gigs a month, depending on your plan. And when you're using cellular services, you're using that data. If you can go into a coffee shop and connect to their Wi-Fi, you're not using your data plan.
I see.
And so it leaves more of your data plan available for when you do want to use it.
Does the iPhone find Wi-Fi first, or you have to ask it for that?
There's a setting in the preferences where you tell it if you want to automatically join networks. Which is generally a bad idea because bad guys put out fake networks. You go into settings and specifically join a network. Once you have joined a network, say at your local coffee shop, the next time you go back there, it will remember that network and just reconnect to it.
I see. Do you need a password for that?
Sometimes. Some restaurants, coffee shops, et cetera, will want a password, and you typically ask your server that. It's sort of this quid pro quo that you're going to buy something at the store, and so they'll let you use the Wi-Fi while you're there.
How about if I have Wi-Fi at home? Do I need, how do I go about setting that up?
When you bought the Wi-Fi router or if it was provided by your internet service,
yes.
They would have given you that password to connect, and they should have connected your devices while they were setting it up.
Oh, I see. I see.
But on the iPhone, there's a settings app that it's a gray set of gears, and you go into the Wi-Fi setting and tell it to join the network. And on Android phones, it's probably something similar.
Very similar. Very, very similar.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. And suppose I start a Wi-Fi at home, but then I go out and I lose the Wi-Fi. Do I lose the connection?
Some phones, and it varies based on the handset and the carrier. Some phones will automatically switch to cellular data. Some phones will not.
Oh, I see. I have to hang up and do it again.
Right, it will stop, you know, downloading or you know, if you're like, you know, streaming audio, it may stop. In fact, it could be application specific too. It may stop the audio when you leave the Wi-Fi section, and you'll have to restart it now that you're on cellular.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. Good luck. Enjoy your phone.
Yeah, some people find, in fact, I've got cellular on my iPad. I hardly ever use it because I'm almost always in Wi-Fi. So, you know, my cellular plan is 200 megs a month.
Yeah.
Not even gigs, 200 megs, and yeah. I rarely use it all because I can almost always find Wi-Fi.
Right. All right, our next caller is Angelina from Greece. Welcome, Angelina. What's up?
Over there? Nope. Another button to push.
Angelina, are you there? Nope. Angelina's not there.
Did we lose her?
We may have lost Angelina.
Angelina, if we lost you, you know, call back. We're frantically pushing buttons
while,
here.
While we're waiting for Angelina, interesting, we're seeing stories that people are, as they were with the iPhone 5S, they're upset with the iPhone 6S.
It doesn't look
different enough. Right. Nobody knows you're the coolest guy on the block.
And Apple's commercial is nothing's changed except everything.
Yeah, except...
Because it's all software in the phone.
Right.
The phone itself doesn't look different enough.
All right. Our next caller is Joanne from Greece on the line. Welcome, Joanne. What's up?
I'm sure you'll say no, but I have Dropbox, and is the stuff that's in there fairly secure?
No.
Oh.
Well, you asked.
So don't put my passwords in there.
No.
Okay.
There have been a couple of breaches where, what was that big one? For a time, you could see anyone else's Dropbox without having their password.
Right.
They had a bug in the software.
Right. That's fixed, but it's still not terribly secure.
Okay.
It's a great thing for sharing files that you want to get out in the public anyway.
Yes, yeah.
Right, but certainly don't put your passwords in there. Now,
okay.
People will tell you
first.
That if... What?
You can encrypt the file yourself and then put it there.
Right, yeah. So if you encrypt the file first, that's a little safer. But you still can put it in someone else's hands, and if they have enough time or a fast enough machine, they can decrypt it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that takes care of that then.
There you go. Sorry,
all
Joanne.
Right. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
There's a program, what was the name of it? BoxCryptor, I think, that is designed to encrypt all the files before you put them on the cloud.
Right.
So a pre-internet encryption. But then you have to trust them, too.
Right. And that's, you know, security in general is who do you trust?
Yeah.
Right? Just another game. Was it Jan Murray? Who do you trust? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. We shouldn't single out Dropbox. This is a potential issue with all the cloud services.
Right. Whether it's iCloud or Google's cloud storage or Amazon's web services or cloud storage. I mean, all of them have this potential of a breach and a problem.
Which one was it? Steve Gibson from Security Now did an overview of all the cloud services, and his favorite is Jungle Disk going to Amazon. So Jungle Disk is a program you run on your computer. It encrypts the data first and then sends it to your cloud storage company. And because you're encrypting it on your computer, the other end, you know, the cloud company cannot see it theoretically. But then it comes to, you know, in 10 years, the computers will be better and we'll be able to crack the passwords better. That's right. Why we keep seeing increases in security. You know, we were using, 256-bit keys. Now we're using 1024-bit keys, and 4096-bit keys are getting to be popular because all that stuff we encrypted 20 years ago that would take millions of years to crack, well, now you can do it in a few hundred hours maybe with today's computers and the old encryption.
Right. So, yeah, it's if you're still using 128-bit or 64-bit, heaven forbid, you know, go to 4K encryption, 4096 bits, or 8K encryption would probably be as good. It's a very interesting issue. Lots and lots of places give us storage, and many of them are fairly secure. So, you know, depending on what it is you don't want to get out, don't put it up there. You know, if you're a world-famous author, you may not want to put your next manuscript up there right away in most cases. But it is convenient. It is easy. It's designed to be that. And a lot of people have a problem with the ease of use. You know, it can translate to poorly executed security. So be a little careful of that.
And that's sort of the trade-off. If you want it easy, it may not be secure.
Well, and that's exactly right.
And there's so much pressure on programmers to release it now, release it now, release it now, and we'll fix it later, that security tends to be a lower priority than getting the features working, which
right.
is exactly the opposite of how it should be from a security standpoint.
Right, right. I'm not going to read a security news item, but I'm going to read an Apple news item that doesn't have to do with security. That's a nice thing always. The app slicing feature in iOS 9 that enables developers to send optimally sized variants of their apps to different devices is unavailable because of a bug in iCloud, which is Apple's cloud service for its devices. Slicing is one of three components of Apple's app thinning process that enables developers to install iOS apps by matching app delivery to the capabilities of the user's device, which results in a smaller footprint. So if you're and this is a non-real example, but if your device didn't have sound on it, you would download a version of the app that didn't include any sound features, and that would result in a smaller download.
Right. And less storage on your device.
And less storage on your device. So app variants created by slicing the app contain only the executable architecture and resources that the target device needs. Thus, code designed for devices running 64-bit processors would not download to those running 32-bit processors. Image resources are sliced by the resolution and device family. That slicing feature is supported in the latest iTunes and on devices running iOS 9 and later, according to an Apple developer page. Otherwise, the App Store delivers universal apps to customers, which are larger. But on Thursday, Apple informed developers that app slicing is currently not available for iOS 9 apps because of an issue affecting iCloud backups created from iOS 9, where some apps from the App Store would only restore to the same model of iOS device. So if I have an iPhone 5, and I then buy an iPhone 6S, that app from the iPhone 5 won't restore because it doesn't have the resources it needs.
Right.
So rather than going back to the original repository of all the pieces and parts, it will only download that one thing, and it says, well, this is not right, so I can't download it. When a customer downloads your iOS app, they will get the universal version of the app rather than the variant specific for their device type, it told developers. Apple informed developers that app slicing will be re-enabled with a future software update. Apple's testing platform for developers, called Test Flight, will continue to deliver variants for internal testers. The company rolled out iOS 9 about a week ago. So is your iPhone close to full? Maybe you just have to wait until Apple fixes the problem. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
This has been an issue for similar issues for quite a while in the Apple App Store, and I know several developers that have complained about this. As the screen sizes change, you need to put new artwork for the different size screens.
Yep.
In your app. And then the Retina came up. And so you can have Retina versus non-Retina. So now you need more artwork. And then you've got iPad and iPhone versions. And so what Apple calls a universal app is optimized for both iPhone and iPad.
And a half a dozen different versions of each.
Versions of each, different size screens, yeah. So the app itself is two or three times bigger than it would be if it would only ran on one size screen on one certain model. So that's what the developer has to choose. They have to make a bigger app that's universal, or they have to make six smaller apps that will run on each different size screen. And so, you know, there's advantages.
And then assume that the person loading it, buying it, or getting it from the App Store is savvy enough to know which version goes with their phone.
Right. And if they get a different phone, do they pay for a different version?
Right.
And so most developers are doing universal, but that then means that the apps are so much bigger.
Right.
And we really wish they would stop selling 16 gig models. in the Apple world, at least, they stop selling 32. They go from the 16 to 64. But I would have wished 32 would be the entry level.
Exactly.
So I have two 16 gig devices, and they're both completely full. I use them for different purposes, but they're both completely full.
Right, right.
So 32
would be enough. And
it's great
to be able to save a couple of bucks. Well, Apple is also very proud of the RAM, so you're saving more than a couple of bucks. But it's nice to be able to save that money at the beginning, but later on, it's really annoying. It's really annoying.
There was a class action suit. I don't know if it's got dismissed or not, but someone was suing Apple over selling 8-gig phones. That's how long ago the suit has been running.
Wow.
And because the OS takes up 2 or 3 gigs. And you know, one of our responses, well, Android has 8-gig phones too, and because they're cheaper. And right. You want something cheap, but you want it big, and you sort of can't have it both ways.
Right.
But prices have been driven down dramatically over the years, so now 16 gig is the smallest you probably find on any phone.
Well, and a large part of that, of course, is economies of scale.
Yeah.
You know, when the Apple phone first came out, there weren't many of them, and so you had very expensive pieces and parts.
And now they're selling $50 million a quarter.
But now, it's not just that, but who doesn't sell a phone?
Yeah.
And no matter what anybody says, a lot of those components are the same.
Yep.
And so there's economies of scale when you only make even 100,000 of them versus 15 million of them a quarter. Those components are going to get a lot cheaper.
There have been stories every now and then about some phone being delayed because Apple bought all the NAND chips.
Right.
We got 50 million of them this quarter, so we'll give you extra money to sell us all of your production capacity.
Right.
And so chip fab companies are investing and making new fabs.
Exactly right. And that's a good thing for all of us because that just drives down the price. If you're not familiar with that, look up economies of scale.
I think I read that was it Texas Instruments just built a new $1 billion chip fab in Texas.
Yep.
And there were complaints that there aren't enough humans running it. It creates a lot of construction jobs, but not many long-term jobs.
Right, right.
Because it's mostly automated.
All automated. Yeah. Exactly. Robots have taken many jobs over, and it's
the tedious ones, we hope.
Yeah, right. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 966-5299, 800-790-0415. And we'll be back with more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Brian from Pavilion, New York on the line. Hiya, Brian. What's up?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good. You?
Very good. Great show, as usual.
Thank you.
I wanted to kind of knock Windows 10 around a little bit with you. I know it's a lot of fun to do. A couple of things that I was curious about. I couldn't really find any real information. I'm looking around. And that, do you have any idea or heard any news about what the pricing structure is going to be when they finally go to just Windows?
When they go to just Windows, which will be a subscription model, no. I have not heard word one as to what that will cost a year.
But the cost of Windows 10 to buy outright, if you don't have an upgrade ability, is $120 for Home and $200 for Pro.
Right.
Would you think that would carry on? Like it would be like monthly or yearly. You think it would be that much? You think?
Well, looking at what Microsoft Office 365 is, you know, $100 a year for an Office suite, it's probably about the same for Windows. They might bundle them both for $150 or something like that.
Right.
Break it down to $10 a month.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you break it down to like $10 a month, it doesn't sound like a lot. But we're paying $10 a month for Spotify. We're paying $10 a month for Apple Music. $10 a month for Pandora. $10 a month for Office. and suddenly it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
It is. I've actually avoided almost all those things for that very same reason, because it does add up so quickly. And I'm just trying to decide my next move, technology-wise, because I have several business licenses, and then I have, of course, my home computers and stuff. That could really add up. I was wondering if...
Yep. Well, that's why a lot of people are taking a look at LibreOffice, which is free. They're looking at Google Drive, which is free. They're looking at...
And Chromebooks, which don't have a OS licensing fee to begin with.
Right. And people are looking at them now because it's a little bit of research, right? It depends. Yes, there are things that Microsoft Office, particularly in Excel... will do that most of the free ones won't do. But do you need those things?
I do have one customer. I do quite a bit of commerce in Canada, and we do NAFTA, and they need to have all of our billing and certification requirements. They're all done through an application that they write that uses the FTP functionality in Explorer.
Ouch.
And the thing is that, I might, and it's a good customer, and I may very well end up having to participate just for that reason.
But that doesn't have to be every one of your machines.
Exactly.
And people are looking at those kind of things too. I know several people who've gone to Chromebooks for their carry around, and they still have a Windows machine or a Linux machine or a Macintosh on their desk for the big stuff.
Which is precisely what I do. Right. I have a Chromebook, which I actually didn't care for at first because I thought it was limited, but then this magical application, desktop sharing, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
All of a sudden you can use your Chromebook for everything.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, well, that's real good.
Good.
And another thing I don't really care about in the Windows 10 structure either, I'm not a big fan of not being able to control the updates. Is that, do you think that's going to be a permanent feature as well? Or?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. The model you're seeing in Windows 10 is the model they're going to follow. You'll be able to postpone it for a bit, but not for long.
Right. Well, my biggest thing was is I liked the 7 structure, and I could take the critical updates, of course, and then pick and choose from the junk I really probably would never use. And Microsoft's talent for making decent products, and then all of a sudden just dropping a stinker in the middle of it. Silver Light or something that I never used, and even like the Net framework, which at first was a huge security issue, all of a sudden, well, it's on my machine, and I can't say no,
Right, exactly right.
So I'm not really sure if that's a... that's why I'm trying to make a decision now is how I want to approach...
Yeah.
Sadly, they haven't given us a lot of direction on that yet.
Right.
And especially when updates require you to reboot, I'm not ready to reboot yet.
Exactly. No, I know. Especially you have some of the larger softwares like the CAD softwares and even the accounting software. A reboot can constitute 25, 30 minutes of non-productive time for some people.
Yep. Yep. And we used to see it all the time when our faculty would come in, grab their laptop, head off to a class, open it up, and the first thing they see is reboot now or in 10 minutes.
Right.
Well, I've got a 2-hour class. What do you expect from me here? So, yeah, it's an issue all the way around. But we've heard really nothing. They're very opaque about what's gonna come in the subscription service.
Maybe they're testing the water on it. I don't know. I don't think I care for this that much. But I did put 10 on an inconsequential machine in my garage. I listen to you guys on the weekends.
Well, then it's not inconsequential at all, is it?
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. But I did have issues, of course, with connectivity. It just won't play the M3U files.
Right.
It just won't play it. So I ended up with, I forgot what I put in there, one of the Linux programs that works very well. I listen to you guys on that now.
VLC.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right. And it still, to this day, still refuses to listen to, still refuses to play the stream. Unless I use a secondary browser. And I'm just wondering, especially with things like drivers for my older printers and things, if that's going to be an issue. But anyway, well, we're just hoping I could find a little more information on it. But
Well, as time goes out.
Right, and that's the reason why there's so many XP machines still running today. It worked. Your drivers work. Your apps work. I don't want to upgrade and run that risk of something not working.
And that you know, goes back to the whole first hour of this show. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is not making the money they think they should be making because people aren't upgrading. So now it's going to be a subscription service. You don't get a choice.
Right. Well, like Windows 7 is tremendous. I cannot say enough good about it. I mean, it just was just fantastic. Very light, runs beautifully. 10 boots up magically. I don't know how they figured that out, but you know, 10's amazing when it comes up. But I just again, I'm not real sure if I want to fork over that kind of money.
Well, and you know, your choices are to go to a different operating system.
Right, through you know, things like accounting software and stuff, what would be available for like a Linux base?
Well, there are plenty of them out there, but the question is, do they do what you want to do?
Yes, and it's my accountant.
And your accountant probably uses QuickBooks.
Or you know, the other, or any of the generic stuff here. You know, I was really surprised that Google, as part of their package, doesn't offer something. At least could be like pedestrian type of accounting software. I'm really surprised that that's not something.
Well, don't forget, a lot of those are available online now.
Yes.
So if you're using Intuit or whatever, you can do that online.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's completely operating system agnostic.
Exactly. Yeah, I do. It doesn't matter to me much, but you know, I still in the back of my mind. I'm like you guys. I grew up with computers, and you know, right from the very beginning, right through to now, and I still have got the old school mentality where, you know, lighter is better and keeping your information close instead of out on the cloud is better. And I could very well be wrong, but, you know.
I understand the attitude, and it depends. You know, you're going to be transmitting a lot of that stuff anyway, mm-hmm. whether you're transmitting it to the IRS or Intuit or whoever, and having them responsible for it. Maybe not in your case, but in a lot of people's cases, it's the only backup. You know, they never back up. So having Intuit have the data and do that for them is probably not a bad thing at all.
Well, yeah, and I use Google Drive for, you know, all my critical files and things like that. And I would say it actually works much quicker and better than, well, I won't use the brand name, but they had one of the larger backup companies. And I had no issues at all whatsoever with Google.
Right.
One of the other larger companies, you had to actually tell it to back up specific files. Now, you just assumed that it was doing it, but it wasn't backing your computer up unless you tell it exactly what to do.
Right.
I thought that was weakness, and it wasn't really plain in the agreement when you first, you know, subscribed to it.
Right.
It wasn't laid out really well like that. But anyway, well, thank you guys for your time and a great show. And I am a member, and I join every spring. So
that's what I love to hear, Brian. Thank you.
But get good luck on your winter fall fun drive, and I hope everybody contributes.
Thanks. Me too. Thank you so much.
All right, bye.
And sort of as a benefit to computer agnostic, you know, people, a lot of software is starting to go web-based. So it works in any web browser on any platform. You don't need to worry about buying a program and being compatible with your computer. In fact, ironically, QuickBooks has a simple version for $10 a month. So there's another $10 a month.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, because it's web-based, it's a subscription, and it's an ongoing charge.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Tawaga.
There we
New
go.
York.
What's up?
Well, first I'd like to update something I said a few weeks ago, and that is when you're on Linux in particular, you be careful when you're typing passwords on wireless keyboards.
Yeah.
I speak specifically of the Logitech one I own because there is some sort of Windows program you can get to add to the driver the encryption ability between the keyboard and your computer to prevent eavesdropping for, you know, entering passwords and something like that. There is one exception to that because Bluetooth has encryption built into the base protocol itself, so really you don't have to worry so much when you use a Bluetooth keyboard because it's already encrypted. Don't matter what two endpoints you have.
There is a very short window of exploitability when you first pair a keyboard, but after it's paired, then everything is encrypted.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I heard that on Security Now.
Yeah, no, that's very true. That act of pairing by necessity must happen in plain text, right? Because it doesn't know what the other machine is capable of doing in terms of security, encryption.
Wow, it sounds like Wi-Fi protected setup, too.
Exactly. Yes. And so
that's unsafe because of the pin problem, yeah.
Right. So it is that moment of pairing. And that's why, you know, you're always told do that in your home. And the theory is that Bluetooth is supposed to be a short enough distance that if you look around and don't see anybody with an earshot, you're good. But of course, as we know, Bluetooth can be a lot farther figured out, intercepted a lot farther out than originally advertised.
I would think that depends upon what amplifiers you choose to apply, maybe going outside of the FCC spec as far as transmitting power and sort of noise reduction techniques.
You can build, I don't know if you've ever seen something they call the Cantenna, which is a wireless.
Wi-Fi war driving.
Exactly. War driving and all that stuff. Grab a Pringles can and shoot a Wi-Fi signal from one mountaintop to another. Cantennas, you can build a Bluetooth Cantenna as well.
The big networking news this week is late this week, Aaron ran out of address space to allocate for IP version 4.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the stories I have here that we haven't gotten to yet. But yeah, what the deal there is that every device on the internet must have an IP address. And Internet Protocol version 4 gave us 4 billion of them.
Which we thought would be enough.
Which was originally going to be enough back in the 60s was going to be enough. But then the problem with that is that everybody has, 15 different devices. What with your desktop, your laptop, your phone, your tablet, blah, 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 your television, your refrigerator. And that's a problem. So they went to IPv6. Which actually provides 340 undecillion addresses. That's one followed by 36 zeros. That's enough to give 5 × 10^28 addresses to every single person on the planet.
Oh, I also heard it as, something to the effect of enough addresses to give every single atom in the known universe and one address.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. But, at some point they're going to want a second.
Yeah.
But the thing with that, the accounting, if you will, on the amount of addresses, there are huge, huge swaths of them set aside for special purposes.
Right.
For example, think of in IP version 4, anything that begins 127, that huge block of addresses, all reserved for localhost use.
Yep.
Right.
The same thing in IP version 6. There's huge swaths of that cut out. For example, big example is link local addresses. That's the stuff that starts FE80 it down. That's huge. Right now, for the global internet, I think they're only using 2,000 and 3,000 as prefixes.
Right.
Yeah. There's actually been an interesting new market cropping up because of the resistance of internet providers to implement IPv6, because it's all new hardware you have to buy and install. There's this market coming out in IPv4 resale. So in the early days, Apple was given 13 and HP 13 dot everything. So they had 16 million addresses. HP was given, say, 14 and they have 16 million addresses. Some of these big companies that don't need that many addresses are giving it back to Aaron so it can be reassigned to something else. Some of the companies are selling those blocks off to other companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just say this much. It looks like we're coming up to break time really soon.
Yeah, we are right now.
Reallocating and all that, I think it's a waste of time, effort, and money that effort could probably better be spent converting IP version 6 instead of all this,
exactly.
Of addresses.
All right. Thanks, Joe. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Steve Ray, Michael Oden, Nick Francesco, Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Luton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Doug from Holly, New York on the line. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Not bad. Yeah, I have a question. I have a home network kind of thing where I have two Macs and a Windows box. And I have a printer, Canon printer, connected to one of the Macs through a USB. And both the Macs can print fine to that printer. My question is about the Windows box. It's Windows 7 Home, and it sees the printer, and it will send the file, but when the printer prints it out, it prints a blank page no matter what. Any suggestions?
Are you using the Bonjour for Windows installer, or are you using straight print services?
I think I've tried the Bonjour, yeah.
Yeah, that usually works better. Bonjour is Apple's network identification protocol, and
right.
It allows the computers to automatically see and connect to other devices. Bonjour for Windows will install that service on Windows and help it access Mac printers better. The other thing is to make sure you've got the right printer driver. And because one of the things Windows often does is set it up as a generic PCL printer, and that generally doesn't work right. You need to load the exact driver for that printer. Sometimes we've even seen you have to plug the printer directly into that computer first to let it know and download that driver. Then you can switch it to be a network printer.
Okay, I think I've tried both of those things you're suggesting. In If it was a drive, my question would be if it was a driver issue or the Bonjour for Windows issue, would the PC be seeing the computer to send the file to and then sending a file that it prints a blank page out?
That makes me think it's a driver issue, so it's not sending the right commands for that printer to interpret.
Okay. Or it's sending the text in white.
Yeah, white text on white paper. That's a little hard to read.
I never saw that. I'll look into that.
Or it's sending a font that is not existent.
Okay.
I don't know Canon printers that well. If there's a log you can get at, or maybe there's a log in the
Windows, a log in the Mac.
In the Mac, yeah.
But
Whether
it's readable
in a,
or not, human
log.
Readable. In the console application, which is in the utilities folder, that shows you all the logs the Mac generates, and one of those logs should be the print log. What's the name of the printer daemon? LPD.
LPD is the printer daemon, yeah.
Yeah. So it might be under LPD instead of printing, but it should be in there somewhere. Open the console log and then tell Windows to print, and so the log messages will be from that recent activity.
Okay.
But the problem with logs is they're often not understandable other than by the programmer.
Right. Yeah. Or they're not helpful because the person who programmed the logging function was interested in things other than what you're interested in.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But I would certainly start with that and see where it takes you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll give those things a try and I'll let you know.
All right. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Absolutely, bye-bye. Yeah, printing, with the problem when you mix more than one thing is where's the problem, right?
Yeah.
If the box was connected directly to his Windows machine, then you would have just a certain couple of things you could test.
Mm-hmm.
If it was printing from the Mac was the problem. It's just a couple of things to detect. But here it's the printer, the driver on the Mac, the network connection between them, the driver in the PC. It's just a lot of things to play around with to make sure that you've got the right thing at the end. So, yeah, I don't know. It's, I don't know.
Trial and error to see which one it ends up being.
Right.
The other thing you could do is hook the printer to the Windows PC and then share it to the Macs. Depends on which one you print the most on, probably.
Yeah.
That's the way. Remember, the early days, printers were expensive, so you got one printer and shared it among all your computers?
Yeah.
Nowadays, printers are so cheap, you know, $50 gets you another printer. You just buy a printer for that computer.
Yep. Well, I bought a laser printer that actually lives solely on the network wirelessly.
Yep.
And setting it up on my Mac, setting it up on my Windows box, setting it up on my Linux box, setting it up on my Chromebooks.
Yep.
Ridiculously easy.
And so many printers, in fact, I'd probably say most printers have at least Wi-Fi built in these days.
Right.
So they can also print from your tablets and your phones.
Right. And it was so easy to do, I may just now set up my father-in-law's printer. He passed recently, and we inherited his color printer. And so
that
I may actually set that up now.
That often becomes a trade-off, too. You want color, but inkjet printers, the ink costs a fortune. And so what a lot of times we find is people get a black and white laser printer for their regular printing stuff and then a color printer when they want to do color. You can get color laser printers pretty inexpensive these days, but the $200 color laser printers don't quite do that well on photos.
No, they don't.
Mixing liquid ink is still really good on inkjet. When you get into the $5,000 or $6,000 color printers, they're really good.
Yeah, they're really, really good. But yeah, if what you're printing are color documents, right, where this section's in blue and this section's in green and
pie charts
and things like that, it's fine. Yep. But photos, not so much. I've got time to read another news item. Google has said that it's built a better neural network that is making its voice search work faster and better in noisy environments. We are happy to announce that our new acoustic models are now used for voice searches and commands in the Google app on Android and iOS and for dictation on Android devices. I love dictation on my Android devices. Google speech team wrote in a blog post on Thursday. In addition to requiring much lower computational resources, the new models are more accurate, robust to noise, and faster to respond to voice search queries. In 2013, Google brought the same voice recognition tools that had been working in Google Now to Google Search. Along with being able to find information on the internet, Google Voice Search also was able to find information for users in their Gmail and Google Calendar and Google Plus accounts. At the 2013 Google I.O. Developers Conference, Amit Singhai, today a senior vice president and Google fellow, said the future of search is in voice. For Google, he said future searches would be more like conversations with your computer or device, which also will be able to give you information before you even ask for it. The company made it clear way back then that it would be continuing to focus on voice search, and this week's announcements back that up. Google explained in a blog post that it has updated the neural network it's using for voice search. A neural network, of course, is a computer system based on the way human brain and human nervous system work. It generally uses many processors operating in parallel. The improved neural network is able to consume the incoming audio in larger chunks than conventional models without performing as many calculations. With this, we drastically reduce computations and make the recognizer much faster, the team wrote. We also added artificial noise and reverberation to the training data, making the recognizer more robust to ambient noise. If Google wants more people to use voice search, they need to continue improving its accuracy. Very few people rely on any smartphone voice products. They only will rely on them when the accuracy gets to 99%. Imagine if your keyboard was only accurate 95% of the time, meaning that every 5 keys out of 100 were inaccurate. So this is a nice improvement, but until the complete user experience gets to 99%, it won't really make a difference in adoption. Although I have to admit that I dictate to my phone all the time, and it's very good. Do you use voice search regularly? You know, you can still have time to maybe not to give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299.
You're trying to kill me.
Yeah, I am. All right, forget it. We don't have time to call in. But generally speaking, voice, of course, is the way of the future. You can get the Alexa box from Amazon and Siri and Google Now and Cortana.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The Alexa box from Amazon is a single box that sits in your house, or every phone and computer, Android or Mac, will listen to you. So which way do you go?
Yeah.
And now the new Apple TV from Apple, obviously, Siri's built into the remote, so you can talk to your television, your Apple TV, to find out what's on.
Oh, well, I've been using that now because I have a Nexus player.
Yeah.
And Google Now is built into the remote. And I use it all the time. Start Netflix, find this, do that, do something else. Oh, it's great.
Better than having Gary Busey over.
Yeah, exactly.
Those were interesting commercials. Who is it? Bill Hader is in a commercial, show me tortellinis. Here's a picture of what a tortellini should look like. He looks at his hands, and it doesn't look like that.
Yeah, right. there's voice search is the future, and we all know that. Google seems to be ahead of the curve because they have done a kind of a sneaky thing. Back in the day when they first started their voicemail service on Google Voice, they asked people if they would be willing to correct the voice
mistakes,
transcriptions. And so they had millions of people crowdsourced doing their fixing for them.
Yep.
Now, of course, with their new neural networks and the number of resources that Google is willing to throw at any problem, both hardware and people, they've made the next step ahead of the curve by putting their voice stuff on a new and better neural network. Now, we all know that when we do voice stuff through our phone, the phone doesn't actually do anything except record the voice, send it to Google or Microsoft or Apple, and then Google or Microsoft or Apple actually does the translation and then sends back what should be done next. Yeah.
The big key is going to be when you have multiple people in the same room dictating themselves, that the noise isolation, the speaker independency.
Right, and that's why you need a headset.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get, although I don't think there was anybody left on the line. And so thank you very much. You wasted another 2 hours of your life with us. You need to get out more. But don't go away yet, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We will be back next week with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, maybe Dave Enright. We don't know. He's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 56 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.